Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture, and when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space, just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in-store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
All right, it's another film study. We're going to look back at week 11 once again, focus on this high power offense. All of a sudden, it's scoring a bunch of points. Ken McCusick, how are you doing?
You know, just riding on a cloud right now. I don't want this ride to stop. It's been so terrific these last 6 weeks, and really nothing like it since 2000 in terms of a winning streak or a run. The only thing close is the 2012 playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really want to wait until Monday and have that extra day of having to wait one more day for a game.
Kind of sucks. We're going to go out to L.A. for the game, then we're coming back. And, yeah, it's going to be a tight week with Thanksgiving in terms of all that we do with podcasts and whatnot. Now, that's just my limited perspective. Everybody else, they have to wait a day for football.
Right, right. I got to go to work before the next Ravens game and wait all day. So, I enjoy your trip to L.A. You'll get to check out that cool tiny soccer stadium.
they don't play there. They play the Coliseum.
They don't play in the little stadium anymore?
The Chargers play in the
stadium. Oh, that's the Chargers. I got the two mixed up.
Yeah, we went there last year. But the L.A. Coliseum, I think this is about the last chance. This may be the last NFL game that the Ravens ever play there, unless – I don't know what it would take to play the football game there.
Right. You know, the way the football teams move in and out of L.A., it might be the last time they go to L.A. Who knows?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
But let's bring Ivan on, who's already corrected me, so he's feeling right into the show. Ivan, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Nice to be here with you guys again.
Yeah, glad to have you too, Ivan.
Yeah, glad to have you back. What have you been up to?
Just working the YouTube channel, putting out two films a week for my YouTube viewers. I also put a film out like on Thursday or Friday for my Patreon subscribers. And like I was talking to Ken before, you know, we started, we're still hanging on this playoff run down here in Florida. Made it to the third round. So we're just chugging along, trying to keep going, maybe get a state title.
Okay. So give us the scoop on this. So you said you're playing for a regional title in the next game, right?
Yes. Friday, okay. We planned for the regional title. We actually finished third in the district, but because we played so many tough teams, we got in at large, and we beat the number two seed and the number three seed so far. So we're playing the number one seed this Friday.
And it's a team you've already played before.
Yes, we played them before, and we had a terrible start. Fumbled the first play of the game, pick six like the third play of the game, and it just went down here from there. They ended up beating us by 9 points, even after that terrible start.
Wow. Okay, so you can play with these guys.
Yes.
And you're telling me about the size of schools. There's eight different classifications in Florida. I mean, it almost sounds like Florida's really like Texas in terms of how seriously they take football playoffs.
You have the 8A schools, which are a bunch around Orlando, and they have like 3,500 kids.
Wow.
And then, you know, we only have like 1,100. But also, I did visit a school in like one of the largest schools in Texas, and they had 5,500 kids in the school.
Dallas area?
It was in the Dallas area, yes.
Remember, my daughter's high school is Tim Tebow country. And Nice High School in Florida.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
All right. Very good. Well, good luck to you, Coach. That's terrific.
Now, thank you. You mentioned YouTube. You mentioned Patreon. But these are like big websites. How do people find you on these sites?
On YouTube is Sit the Tally Films. And Instagram is Sit the Tally Films. And Twitter is Coach Evans9. And the Patreon thing, any of my videos on YouTube, it's a link on there. You just click it and go from there.
All right. I'm going to have you repeat all of that at the end of the episode, so people who weren't paying attention now don't have to rewind. We'll catch it up at the end again after you guys dig deep into this Ravens offense.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Looking forward to it, Ivan. We've been waiting to have you on for a while. Appreciate you coming back and joining us. We get the pleasure to talk about this game, and boy, it's really hard to find anything negative to say, certainly about the offense.
I know, right? It was one of those games where you were almost bored watching, you know, the offense, because they just were chugging along. There was no controversy. There was nothing, you know, no rah-rah other than one run. It was just like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah. I just love to see it. I mean, they didn't get to third down that often in this game, 9 times. They had a couple drives where it was first down, second down, all the way down the field. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool about it. I just, everything is really going right as things are going. I mean, they had 5 touchdown drives of 70-plus yards in this game. But get this, those 5 drives lasted 10, 8, 7, 6, and 5 plays.
Wow.
So that's knifing through butter on that. It's, you know, that's at least 350 yards. It's probably more like 375 or 80 yards. And how many plays would that be? 15, 26, 36 plays. So mm-hmm. 10 yards a play probably on those drives, you know, in aggregate, just cutting through.
That's amazing.
All right. 0 punts for the game. The Ravens, some people know this. Ryan Mink has been talking about this some, but the Ravens are now on pace to have the fewest punts in NFL history during a 16-game season. They're on pace for 33.6, and the Oilers had 34 in 1990.
So Koch is just – Koch or Cook, how do you say that last
Cook.
Name? Cook. So he's just basically collecting the chit.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the best job in the game right there.
It's the game's best holder, even though Tucker missed one this last week. But he's critical for that, at least. Seventh highest scoring offense in NFL history is what the Ravens are on pace for.
That's crazy. And I would be willing to bet that we're the only team on that list that runs as much as we do.
I would be willing to bet that too, although I didn't look. But it's a couple Patriot teams, maybe as many as three, the 98 Vikings.
Pass.
Denver in recently, like 2013 or something, was the only 600-point team. And you're right. I mean, it's all passing teams is basically the thing. They're all the era of the pass. The Vikings set the record originally, you know, with Billick, and then it's been broken a number of times since. So, yep, this is the only team that's doing it. And if you compared them because of that, because all those other teams did it with passes, if you compare their drive statistics, I guarantee you, I don't guarantee it, but I would bet a lot of money that the Ravens have better looking drive stats, better points per drive, you know, higher rate of first down collection on each series of downs, that sort of thing.
Right. I'd be willing to bet that also, because I remember the Viking team was a lot of throw it deep to Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of throw it deep to Randy Moss and Chris Carter underneath and Jake Reed.
Yeah. And 2007, the 2007 Patriots are also on that list with a lot of throw it deep to Randy Moss. But they had other things too. All right. I have a college broadcast partner who works down in Houston on a radio station now. Kind of is a cautionary tale of what my life could have ended up like if I'd not decided to get out of broadcasting. I probably shouldn't say that. But anyway, Charlie Polillo had me on for a little segment up front. He said this game was about as competitive as Germany and Poland in 1939. You're a history professor. I know you
yes. Yeah. Yes, I actually wrote my little notes down. I see what you're doing. I see the history, you know, correlations.
You got some of your own?
So yeah, I do. For those that don't know, I am a history teacher also. And we go through World War II. We got it coming up probably after the Christmas break.
Okay. All right. What do you have in terms of other thoughts to add to these high-popping numbers? Maybe something
I want to talk about those not having as many third downs. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I looked at the first down yardage for the game to kind of see why we didn't have as many third downs. So in the first quarter, on first downs, we averaged 2.8 yards. Second quarter, 4.8. Third quarter, 4.3. And, you know, anytime you get four yards on first down, you set yourself up for good second and third downs. In the fourth quarter, we had 12.7. Wow. So as a total, that fourth quarter was aided by Gus's run.
Because
as a total, we averaged 6 yards on first down. So you're averaging getting second and four. That's why you don't get the third down right there.
Yeah, it's a great point. There's a graphic out there on Twitter today where the Ravens are over 6 yards. They're the third highest team in the NFL, which is unbelievable to me. It'd be this low, but they're over 6 yards of carry. I think it was 6.28, 6.29 on first down. And that might have been with kneels taken out, because it's kind of important whether you do that or not.
I didn't count the kneel we had either. I didn't count it either.
All right, very good.
You win first down and stay away from third down, you don't have to worry about losing on third down.
Yeah, and you know, if you get 6 yards on first down, that gives you all sorts of opportunities to play four down football too.
Yes, you have your entire playbook is an option.
All right. So we keep saying the Ravens' schedule will improve and they'll face some teams that can stop this offense. But it's yet to happen. And every team, it's something new. Like Houston's going to run us out of the building. They never lost by more than a score. They've, you know, in the Watson era, they've got a pass rush, or we don't have anybody who can stop DJ Reader. I mean, it was nothing but ample time and space in this game. They had 18 out of 27 ample time and space opportunities for Jackson. So they pretty well stopped DJ Reader.
Right. As far as those teams that's coming up on the schedule, I went and looked at it. I don't see anybody on the schedule that even has the potential to slow us down further than the 49ers and the Steelers. And I say that because they have good front sevens. The other six games we have left, maybe, I don't see anybody on that. And then I also looked at the playoff rankings for the time being. So if the playoffs started today, I didn't see anybody in the playoff that could stop us defensively.
Right, because Pittsburgh wouldn't be in.
Right. And, you know, what we just played the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see anybody in the bracket that could stop, you know, their defense could stop our offense.
That's fair enough. So, you know, the great thing about Lamar is that he's very adaptable to the changes they made by team and by game plan. And, you know, all that credit goes to Roman. But I made the point on air today that really Lamar needs to get that too, because he's adapted in the way he's been asked to adapt, which is something quarterback might not want to do, mm-hmm. let alone or be able to do. But if, you know, in against New England, he had a 2.9 air yards per throw, which meant he was keeping the ball away from the New England secondary, keeping them out of the game. Against the other teams they've played more recently, against Cincinnati and in this last game against the Texans, they ramped up play action to a degree we haven't seen yet this year. 56% play action in this last game, which really was done to take advantage of the linebackers of both these teams, and it's done so effectively.
And I think them using play action has really helped the O-line, because as a whole, they're not a great just straight drop back passing O-line. And the fact that they can kind of get guys to think it's run and set it up with leverage and whatnot, it does a great job of helping us. And as well as you, because when you do stats, it doesn't show the straight dropbacks. It helps them, you know, with pass pro, it helps them with the run game. And it also helps Lamar with his reads. Because if you can get those linebackers sucked up in two, you got a lot of open space, you know, in your intermediate game. And he's gotten a lot better at throwing those intermediate throws too.
Yeah, and not only is he good at throwing to that open space, that really makes it an easy read to mm-hmm. just read the field and see the open spaces a lot easier. Yeah.
That's Roman helping him out, helping his progression.
Yeah. What I thought, the one thing I thought the Texans did for the Ravens in this game, or not the one thing, but one of several things they did, is they really rushed four a lot of the game. They only rushed five a few times and never more than that. So they were very fearful of Lamar losing the pocket, and they kind of lost sight of how badly they were giving him time to just make a sandwich back in the pocket and decide who he's going to throw the ball to, because he had a lot of full 3-second pockets. That's what ample time and space is, and he used the full 3 seconds a few times.
Yeah, when I was doing my breakdown for this week, which obviously was on him, he had a lot of dropbacks where he rose in the pocket and still was untouched. He mm-hmm. would drop back, go through his progressions, then step up in the pocket to avoid the edge rush and still mm-hmm. have time to throw the ball. So that's at least those 3 seconds you're speaking of.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you know what? That's real impressive, the times he was able to step up in the pocket, because that's where the Ravens' weakness is in theory in terms of not having a center who can anchor. And also the Texans on the nose or at the three tech, wherever he is, Reader has the ability to get that push. So I thought it's just a great game by the offensive line.
Yeah. And that, like I said, they're doing a great job of just playing ball, just as a whole, acting like one person. They're doing a great job of synchronizing whatever they're doing. And, you know, Roman has kind of used Bozeman's strengths. Bozeman, a better puller, in my opinion, than Yonder, mm-hmm. and a little younger legs. And he, you know, he's the puller most of the time other than the tight ends. And he does a great job of basically playing to their strength.
Yeah, I agree, and it's definitely there's two parties that are doing strong things, and Yanda's pulled more in recent weeks, but Yanda is great for opening the gate, for pivoting mm-hmm. to get that defensive tackle usually sealed to the inside, while Brown either creates that half level up seal on that scraping linebacker or kicks out to open the hole. They got a lot of different ways they can really open that hole for the power game.
And I love the way they run power, the 14, 15 different ways I've seen it run. My favorite one is when he motions Ricard across and let Ricard kick out the end and Stanley blocks down. It's my favorite one, because that also sets up Ricard getting the ball in passes too. And I love when he catches the ball.
How much fun has that been?
I love it when he catches the ball. He is not trying to go out of bounds at all.
I love it. It's just everything about his mannerisms when he catches a football, I just love. I mean, first of all, he's shaking off every defender. He looks like he's running like Fred Flintstone from an old cartoon, you know, in terms of carrying the whole team on his back. And even they oftentimes won't even be able to get him to the down, but they'll blow the whistle for forward progress, or maybe he'll be pushed out of bounds. And then he's not giving that football up. He wants to go out and stick it into the chest of the official. You know, it's comical, every bit of his actions. So.
What he reminds me of is, you remember when Chris Berman used to make the noises, the boom, boom, boom. That's what it sounds like every time Ricard gets the ball. I hear those sounds in my brain. I can hear Berman saying that. It's crazy. And the fact that he really loves the game, whether mm-hmm. it's catching the ball. I think he got a sack when Bowser got a touchdown last week, and you could just see him in the background celebrating the sack and Bowser scoring. He's a overall team guy. He's doing whatever it takes for the team to win.
Yeah, just it's he's really exciting. I thought it was an interesting thing last week because Bowser scored a touchdown. Ricard got his first sack. Who gets the football would be one question. I think the touchdown takes precedence probably of those two. Hopefully he gets another sack.
Right.
Ricard has now the NFL record, as I am told, for the most receptions in a season where he had a sack with 7. Okay. And, you know, there's some guys like Vrabel might have had 5 in a season, and J.J. Mm-hmm. Watt might have had 5 or 6, but his 7 is the record. And he has a chance, I think, because I think Ricard is going to become more of a fullback's fullback, more mm-hmm. of the guy I see him becoming more like, although maybe he won't be exactly the same, maybe he won't be quite as the pass catcher, is Muhaley.
Okay.
All right, so he wasn't part of the offense at all in 2006. He had 2 career catches, and then all of a sudden he had that catch at Tennessee for 30 yards. It was the longest ever by a fullback, and then he had 20 catches the rest of that season. He was a big, big part of the offense. Wouldn't be shocking to me at all if Ricard went on this year to have 20 catches for the season after that game he just had.
Me either. It was not either because of how much of a threat he is, you know, on at age. You got to – a lot of people try to avoid him. That's why he gets so – just be, you know, honest with it. They're trying to avoid that 300-plus-pound guy pounding on them, and he's able to slip in the flats.
Yeah.
And then once he gets in the flats, you got DBs that don't really want to tackle him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Marcus Peters has shown a lot of lack of desire to be physical in the secondary, but I love the idea of putting other teams secondary to the test with that kind of a player on the edge. And, I mean, it's the classic Ravens misdirection that you want to get speed in space, but you love to get size in space as well because it sets up your speed inside. I mean, just – I love it.
Yes, and, you know, him along with 3 tight ends, that's tough. It's tough. A lot of yak going on there. A lot of yak.
Yep. All right. They got lots of rotational ability with that. I love every part of that. Coming up with Aaron Donald this next week mm-hmm. and looking at the way they're going to need to deal with that inside presence, I just see them sticking a big body in his rib cage. They're going to have somebody blocking him every play. The Rams, of course, are going to try and set up for man-on-man blocking whenever they can to get Donald easy wins against anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you stick a man in his rib cage. You got it, Ricard. You got Boyle. You got a fullback if you want to use it who might be a tight end. Could be also Boyle or could be Hurst. You know, you got so many options. You got a second lineman. You got a pulling guard. So many ways they can stick another guy in his rib cage.
Now, I kind of disagree on this one. Because we have a mobile quarterback, you kind of don't have to block him. Let him be the read guy.
Huh.
Okay, the read guy. And the reason I say that because we have a guy. Do you know Jeffrey Simmons, the rookie for the Titans?
No, I don't.
He's from Mississippi State. He was their first round pick for the Titans, and he hurt his ACL or something, so he's just not starting to play. But in high school, we couldn't block him. So what we chose to do was just read him every play. Wherever he was the read, and we didn't win the game, but we were able to get a bunch of yards because, you know, why take somebody that we know we can't block and just make him wrong every play?
Mm-hmm.
He's either going to chase the quarterback or chase the running back, and whichever one he go to, the other person's going to keep the ball because we had a running – you can do that with a mobile quarterback.
Right.
Probably can't do it with the traditional guy, but we were able to do it. And so, you know, we can try to block Aaron Donald, but if it gets to the point where we can't block him, read him.
Right.
He can't tackle the running back and the quarterback.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I don't want to have Lamar take unnecessary hits from Donald even when the ball's going somewhere else. But, you know, the play by Brennan Scarlett this week for the 7-yard, they called it a sack, but it was really a run play. It was a read option play where he was just in there too quickly to deal with it. I'm a little fearful of Donald being in too quickly because of how good he is. Mm-hmm. To make that, and I'm not sure you have the same option to let a guy in the backfield from the middle of the line as opposed to an edge guy.
You can wham that guy in.
You
can wham him like you said with Ricard.
Yeah,
like with the fullback or whatever, just coming from the opposite side, especially if he runs up the field like that. If Donald's the type of guy that just blows up the field, mm-hmm. he can definitely get trapped and whammed easily.
Okay. All right, so that's how you do it. You let him into the backfield, and that makes the choice for Jackson right off in terms of the play has to go opposite the fullback's motion, the Ricard or Boyle motion.
Right. So let's say Aaron Donald is offensive left side in like a three technique or whatnot. And Ricard's on the offensive right side. So as the ball snap, maybe we got somebody in the pistol, Ricard will come across and the O-line will go block and do whatever they do. As Donald comes up the field, Ricard would just wham him and the ball should go right off that block.
Okay. But the ball by blocking it that way, does it mean that Jackson has to run right? Okay.
You can. It doesn't even have to be one of those plays where he keeps it. It could be an automatic give. Okay. We could just block it up, especially with all the tight ends we got. It could be blocked up right. It could have a man on man, and the extra man would be Ricard hitting Donald. And you can also get a double there, too. I mean, there's plenty of ways to do it because of those three tight ends. And they have to respect Hollywood speed or whoever's outside speed. So it's a ton of ways to do it. And I'm not saying just let Aaron Donald go every play because that would be ludicrous. Because Lamar would take hits. But you just got to mix it up because if you do it one way all game on him, he's going to screw it up. He's going to mess the backfield up. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen a guy that good in a long time. So if we're running straight at him, it needs to be a double. Read him from time to time. And also, you know, wham him with tight ends and fullbacks. It's got to be mixed up.
Yeah, I'm eager to see how that kind of a physical workload, and I know that you know, because they're always trying to get these one-on-one matchups, Donald is so good at using his hands. Mm-hmm. He doesn't take the kind of physical beating. He doesn't get punched as much, I don't think, as other interior defensive linemen. And if they can get a guy to his rib cage, I bet you could really limit either his snaps or his effectiveness on those snaps.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would love to see the matchup if he's on the offensive right with Yonder. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that. Even though I know he normally plays the opposite side, I would love to see him and Yonder go at it for a bunch of snaps.
Right. I would have to think they're going to try and exploit that left A gap where mm-hmm. Bozeman and Skura are with Donald. It just makes too much sense to not do it that way.
Right.
I'm just looking at his snap count for the year, and in 10 games, he's played 612 snaps, so he's averaging over 61 snaps per game, mm-hmm. which is absurd for a defensive tackle. That's ridiculously high. But it's almost 100% of snaps, but it's probably more like 88 or 92 or something. But it's a very high percentage of L.A. snaps.
Crazy thing about Aaron Donald and all these snaps he's playing, he's in great shape. I've never seen a guy that big with abs.
He lifts at only 280 pounds. A play on the inside like that.
Only 280, but still got the six-pack? That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Right. I wouldn't want to deal with him.
Yeah. At 6'1", too. That's okay. Wow.
Just think about his body type and how well he plays the run and pass based off the two guys we got playing that same position.
Right. Yeah,
I like all three of them. I'll take our two. But just the body type, he can sustain 60 plays. I don't think our two guys could play that.
Oh, no. Yeah, they're carrying an extra 55 pounds each, so right. I don't think so. No. All right, well, let's go through this a little more. Let's want to talk about Lamar first?
We can go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. So he had ample time space on 17 of 25 dropbacks in this game. By far the best amount of pocket time he's had this year. You know, that's 68% for him. It was 67% overall. They had 1 of 2 for RG3 as well. He should have had about 171 yards given that opportunity set. He actually had 215. He's had a pretty easy time week over week beating expectation because it's a Flacco standard, frankly. He was a lower yards per throw quarterback, and we're not going to bash Flacco, but anyway, he beat that standard by 1.8 yards per throw in only 25 dropbacks. So the plus 44 is very nice for that. And it's just strange because he's beaten it by 8 per throw in one game and 10 per throw this one game, which are just astounding totals. So
his rating for this game was 139.2, I think. Mm-hmm. So is that – what's the perfect number? Is that close to the perfect number?
158.3, which he's had twice this year.
Okay, that's 158. Okay. So that's what, 19 points from being perfect again, which is great for him. When it was thought to be right around 85, 94 for the year.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, people had projected him for an 85 or 90 rating. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think he'd still be, he probably could still get to the playoffs, get the Ravens to the playoffs with a 90 rating.
I think so too. As a six seed, or maybe like getting in on the last week like we did last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But his progression is amazing. I expected him to get better, but not this fast.
Yeah.
Not this good this fast.
He is really just completely feeling it too. He has a projected Next Gen Stats has a projected completion percentages for the pass he throws. And I don't know exactly how they generate that, but last week his projected was 57 and change and his actual was 88. So it's more than plus 30 percentage points, which was by far the highest in the NFL this year. The second highest was Jackson in week one against the Dolphins at plus 26. Nobody else in the league the entire year had been over plus 22.
Yeah. Wow. He just worked. He got better. And obviously there's no other words to really explain it. He put his head in the sand and just got better. He was tired of the talk and the doubt, and he went to work. I'm amazed and proud of the young fellow.
Now, what's his obligation? Obligation is the wrong word. Who should he go after on the Ravens in terms of trying to impress on him the value of investing in themselves during the offseason? I've seen it with Jensen. I really liked it in terms of what he did. Jackson, obviously a great one. I thought it would work out for Jordan Lasley. We didn't really have a sense of what he was doing. Maybe he was just kind of grafting himself to Lamar during the offseason. Mm-hmm. He certainly was trying to be there. But who's the player this year that should do the Lamar or Ryan Jensen thing to try and get better?
Right now I'm going to say Boykin.
He has
the physical tools to be a great receiver. I don't really know what the disconnect is right now. And I don't want to speculate, but I think he would be the guy that would benefit from basically following Lamar wherever he went this summer, or whenever the season's over, to get some kind of chemistry and whatnot, because he trusts Hollywood and they don't even practice together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I would want to be the guy opposite of that, you know, because frankly, we need both outside threat guys to keep that middle open.
Yeah. I agree. That's a great choice. I'm going to pick one on the defensive side of the ball. I'm going to say the guy who needs to figure out one thing different about what he's doing is Jalen Ferguson.
Yes.
And the guy I want him playing with this offseason, I don't know if he would be willing to do it, but he might be the perfect teacher for it, is Pernell McPhee, to learn how to play to rush the passer with his hands. Mm-hmm. Just play that like a video game where it's punch, 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 punch on both sides, and you're making progress towards a quarterback with each punch. Ferguson is a big guy. He's a leverage guy. McPhee is not even as big, but I've got to think there's something he could impart to him.
Yeah, I always say when I talk about the defense that whenever Ferguson gets something other than the bull rush, he's going to be special. Mm-hmm. But he has to develop something other than the bull rush. Right now, his bull rush and setting the edge with it is great. It's good for a rookie. But when he has a counter or two, or maybe even a third, he'll be borderline, unblockable off the edge, because his bull rush is so good that everybody has to sit and expect it. And once he gets, something off of that, he's going to, his sack numbers are going to go up.
Yeah.
And his snaps will go up too.
Yeah. They're all going to be anchoring in and then all of a sudden he's got some kind of rip move or something that'll get by or swim. Yeah. Love it. A little more Lamar. DJ Reader, we talked about never becoming an issue. 14 of 25 dropbacks were play action in this game. The one thing I want to say about that, beyond what we said already, both of the Texans tight ends, inside linebackers, both Cunningham and McKinney, neither one of them is good about reacting to play action. So this was a good opportunity. Same thing with the Bengals with Vigil last week. I'm forgetting even who their second inside linebacker was. Evans maybe for some of it. But anyway, they a lot of play action baiting there. But Lamar, on the other side, is becoming more comfortable with play action. And one of the things I've been noticing is that the turn your back play action plays they were calling, they're all during the scripted sequences 6 weeks ago, roughly. Now, those turn your backs are all spread throughout, which means he's calling them from the sideline, and they're not doing the dance steps for them on Friday to show him how to do this. He's trusting his own ability to turn his back to the defense and then reacquire that field, which I don't really think he had prior to these last few weeks.
He's done an amazing job with that. And the more he shows Greg that he can handle, I think the more Greg is put on his plate. And that may be one of those things that initially was probably just, you know, in the opening script or the opening script of the second half, that he's just, you know, can look at the sheet and say, hey, you know, call whatever the call for it is now and go with it. It's a trust. Lamar showing him he can handle more, and G Rose getting more.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott Garcero asked today, how much more is there left of Greg Roman's playbook? I don't even know how to answer the question.
I think about that in terms of what I do. And I had a base for my little high school team, and we've built on that base every week. And like this week, today, we were doing stuff at practice that we hadn't done all year. So when we run it in the game, whether it be successful or not, the other team will not have seen it at all. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're talking about that, you've mentioned this before on the show that you have offensive linemen that read the same keys and use the same single concept. You might have six of those concepts, you might have eight of those concepts, but you have some number of concepts you work off of, and then you can do all kinds of other skill position things to work around that and exploit it.
A bunch of window dressing. Yeah. You try to keep it the same or close to the same for the O-line because, you know, those guys, you know, you want them to have continuity. But the skill guys, they got to window dress it up and whatnot. It's like using Ricard as a kickout guy, you know, coming in motion. Or you got Hurst in the backfield, using him to kick out on power. There's a bunch of different ways you can run power, but those five main guys pretty much doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. But you got a tight end maybe blocking down or tight end kicking out, fullback kicking out, or fullback and a tight end, you know, you blocking down and kicking out. There's a bunch of different ways you can do it. But those front five, your left guard, your both guards, your both tackles in the center, pretty much doing the same thing. And that's, you know, that keeps continuity right there.
Is it easy enough then also to turn the tackle inside or outside in a scheme like that, or do you call that a different scheme?
Turning the tackle out? That's probably a different play. Probably a different play. But I don't think it's hard because those guys, all they have to do is football. So it shouldn't be a problem. Their job is football. It's different when you're in college, when you're in high school, and you got to go to class. But their job is football. So Roman probably could have 100 plays, and they better know them all because they don't have anything else to do other than football.
All right. Very good. That's only fair. What do you think about the arm angle variation we saw in Lamar this week? Was any of it gratuitous from what you saw?
I think he tried to do some of that last year before he was physically ready. The game hadn't slowed down to him yet. He was trying some of that stuff last year, and he had a bunch of incomplete balls and skipping balls to wide open people, which is one thing I just talked about. But now he has confidence in it. The game has slowed down. He has confidence in his arm. He has confidence in his receivers that, you know, he don't have to have the traditional over-the-top throw every time. If a guy's going across his face, he can flip it, you know, sidearm, three quarters, and get it there. I think he's worked on all those throws. Mm-hmm. I don't think he just dropped back and practiced the normal, traditional, over-the-top throw. He works on all those different angles because that's how he has confidence to throw them in the game now. Because he's throwing them very accurately, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say, too, that he hasn't thrown very many balls that have been even close to an interception the last few weeks, and, you know, knock on wood. But the one I remember seeing was one where he came in about three-eighths underarm, we'll call it. Not all the way, you know, not down at, 430 or something, but it was more like 330 he threw the ball from. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little bit underarm. Ball sailed in high to Andrews. Andrews brought it back down with one hand, caught the ball. But as one of those ones, there was enough traffic around there that one I'm not pleased with. And wasn't any defender right there to block that ball, by the way.
And that's the only thing he has to be careful about, basically getting it batted down or even so, you know, getting it picked by a lineman or whatnot. Because you coming over the top, traditionally, you can get it in different windows and whatnot. I don't know if, you know, different people use brooms for that drill or whatnot. But coming to those different angles, you have to be certain that your line of sight or your thinking of what's going to happen, because those balls can be easily picked off and knocked down because of where they're at.
Yeah. Yeah, so picked off the worst, knocked up the second worst, because you get a lot of interceptions on those. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. What else do we have to say about this, about Lamar? Anything else? I don't have any words, really, to talk about the rushes. I'm not sure there's anything I could. I mean, he just seems to have a level two move ready to go just about whenever he needs one.
I wrote the note I got for that is just think about snapping the ball to Barry Sanders every time.
Who can also throw.
Right, exactly. Who can also throw. That when I look at those runs, that's what I see. I see some Barrett Sanders type stuff. The way he stops and starts and then just run away from people, it's crazy. Just think about that nice run he had this game, and I actually put it in a video that's premiering right now as we speak. Mm-hmm. He had seven people missed him that play. Seven missed tackles.
That's remarkable.
He ran away from somebody, stepped out of a tackle, he juked the guy, he lowered the shoulder on one guy, and then he was finally tackled.
Yeah.
Seven different Texans touched him that play.
That is remarkable. I was last week. I mean, that's the best thing that could happen to Nick Vigil, because last week that play where he broke Vigil's ankles and he was Houdini and whatnot. Vigil's grandkids will see that before he even has a chance to show it to them. So yeah, so he's gonna be watching that play the rest of his life. Poor guy. Oh, I felt sorry for him. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the offensive line, if we're good on that, for just some individual scoring here for a minute and get your thoughts on each of these guys. Ronnie Stanley allowed two pressures in the game. Honestly, let's talk about a higher level, first of all. They had 61 scored snaps in this game. Offensive line didn't have any penalties, no false starts or any of that crap. They didn't give up any sacks. The only sack was a allowed into the backfield read guy, but that was Brendan Scarlett, who took Jackson down for a loss of seven. Hope that doesn't become a standard that players realize that's the way to deal with that. You know, they had all the ATS. We talked about 18 to 27. The scores are obviously very high. I called it an ABBA game because everybody got an A or a B.
That's amazing. For that to happen, and I think you said this is the second or third time this has happened in this little streak of wins. That's crazy. To take five guys and basically rate them as honor roll.
Yeah.
To have an honor roll O-line is something that I'd be willing to take for up until February the 7th or whenever it is. I take that. And if we do that along with the defense, those are the guys that are going to lead the way.
Yeah. Yeah, if they play that well, then anything else you get from the tight ends will put the Ravens completely over the top in terms of what's going on. So Stanley, two pressures allowed. I thought he was otherwise solid. He missed a couple blocks. That was it. Retired early, A for the game. He was kind of actually in the low set of the A games. He did get beaten by Merciless a couple times, once on a spin move, once on a bull rush. But Whitney Merciless is someone who hasn't really shown much of anything since Watt and Clowney were playing together early in the season.
Mm-hmm. He lost the guys that were taking the blocks up. So now he's the focus point. Him and McKinney is the focus point now.
Yeah, there you go. Bozeman, what's really good about it, you mentioned the polling early, 8 of 10 pulls in this game. And he was really the only Raven who pulled successfully in this one. The Ravens otherwise didn't have great success. He did give up a quarterback hit to Omenihu. It was a little bit questionable because it was a fairly late QH, but I went back and forth and eventually I just gave it to him. He still got a B for the game. His second best game of this season. He had one A at Seattle, but this was his second best.
Bozeman, he's our pool guy. He's our traditional pulling guard, so to speak. And I love it because he does a good job of it. And he's not just there taking on guys straight up, which is a weakness of his. He's not the greatest down blocker. They found something he's good at, and they're letting him do it for the most part. And he does other traditional O-line stuff, but he's, in my opinion, a good puller. Mm-hmm. And he does a good job of fitting in holes. And even when the blocking kind of breaks down and is not as the way you draw it up, he does a good job of adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
He does a good job of adjusting and then, just getting ahead on somebody.
Yeah,
looking for work, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I've loved that about him too. He definitely came with the rep as a guy who was too slow for zone blocking. Where that has shown up is in some pass protection situations where he's not quite quick enough when he's handing off a stunt. That may be a technique issue that he needs to do less to hand off that stunt and then, you know, get back. Or it may just be a physical limitations issue that they need to find him other help to cover for that stunt, whether it means Skura needs to be watching that way more than the more than to the right or whatever it might be.
He has to keep his shoulders square. He has to see those stunts coming. Mm-hmm. He can't like fall in love too much with a block and then let somebody, you know, let them loop around him. He has to keep his shoulders square and trust the guys around him.
There you go. Now, I have noticed a couple of times in the last 4 or 5 weeks that he and Stanley seem to be gesticulating each other on the field. One time it was really significant. They were pointing each in a different direction while talking to each other after a play. Have you noticed any friction between those two or any non-complimentary play style? I won't even call it necessarily friction. They're line mates. I hope they like each other, but that they're not exactly synced up in how they're thinking their responsibilities ought to be.
I haven't noticed it, but in the game of football, there are a lot of disagreements that happen, and it's simply communication. And so they may be disagreeing on certain plays and whatnot, but I haven't noticed anything that we should worry about, because those guys have to have the ultimate camaraderie. Mm-hmm. They have to. I mean, even if they dislike each other, you can't even show up outside of it. Because I know, you know, there's this saying, you can't, you don't have to like somebody to work with them. As mm-hmm. an old lineman, you do.
There you go.
You got to trust that guy. The two wide receivers may not have to like each other, the quarterback and the receiver, but old linemen need to like each other and get along because they're the lifeline of the team.
All right, very good. All right, let's talk about Matt Skura. He had his best game of the season. I took away his subjective adjustment in this game. He did give up one pressure in the game, but he on the fake field goal, he missed his block, and so I took away his adjustment for that. So he ended up with his highest raw score of the year and still his highest grade of the year. He got a B, but if he had made that block on the fake field goal, he would have gotten an A. A-minus, actually.
Right. And look at that. One play.
Yeah.
One play, and you go from honor – well, not honor. You're still on honor roll.
Yeah. It's a B to an A-minus. I'm sure it's significant, but anyway, his best game of the year still as it was.
And last year I did a video saying Skura is not the problem, and he's proven it this year. Even when we were having those bad – games we had earlier in the year before Lamar got in there, I didn't think he was the problem then. You know, he might have had some problem plays, but I didn't think he was the problem. And he's shown this year that he's a solid guy.
Yeah, I agree. He's been very consistent. And, you know, he was a C-minus player last year, which honestly isn't bad as I look at it, particularly for a second-year cheap guy like that. Now he's a third-year cheap guy, and I think he's probably a C-plus guy. And might even, you know, on the range of C-plus, B-minus anyway. Now the real question as far as I'm concerned is, can the team and Skura work out a deal after this season, you know, a year before he would normally get signed, avoid all the drama of the fourth year that can happen, like what's happening to Owosso right now, where he's just play falls off for whatever reason, or he gets hurt or any number of things. And you know, make a deal that's comfortable with both sides, give Skura all the financial security he could ever need. Because right now, you know, Matt Skura in 3 years, I'm not going to say this is a tiny amount of money because it's more than so some of us earn in a lifetime. But, you know, he's made $1.5 million or maybe slightly less at this game. Mm-hmm. His next contract, the minimum he's going to make if he signs for 4 years is about $25 million. Mm-hmm. And it's probably more than that. So if you're Matt Skura, would you sign right now knowing you'd have to play next year for three? Would you sign, say, a 4-year deal for $29-30 million? Or would you want to make sure the Ravens paid up fully where they might have to pay $36 million, say, and play out one more year?
Two factors go into this decision for me personally. So, you know, to answer your question, yes, I'm signing. Because that's almost, you know, guaranteeing me at least a year or two of, you know, a bunch of money that I can kind of set myself up for the rest of my life if I take care of my money. Another reason I would sign is because you get to play with Lamar.
Yeah, how cool is that?
As an old lineman, why wouldn't you want to play on a team that runs the ball this much?
Yeah.
Any old lineman would love that.
That'll be interesting because I think he's – he's a very significant portion of what's going on here. They're going to have to make some replacements as it is in the interior line, whether that means Powers is going to have to move up or Bozeman's going to have to take a step up and play the way Skura has, or whether they're going to have to draft another guard to replace Yanda or multiples of those things.
Yeah, I'm really, you know, I predicted that Powers would be the starting guard by now. So I'm really anxious to see, are Hurst and Macari that much better than him, or is this going on where he's not active? Because I really thought he would be the guy to take Bozeman's spot, but I guess there's no need to since Bozeman's playing well. But I just really thought by this time of the year, Powers would be the guy, you know, in there playing right now.
Right. I mean, I agree. I think Bozeman is playing well enough not to lose his job, but I don't think Bozeman is playing well enough that, a change couldn't be made next year, or that if somebody else wasn't playing well, that they'd lose their job and Bozeman would slide over or whatever it might be. But I mean, the problem for me is, why isn't Powers active? Is right. Macari really outplaying him in practice? Or is his perceived versatility that much? Because I think Bozeman would be the natural guy to move in at center if something happened to Skura anyway.
I have the same question. I'm really interested to see why he's not even being active. Is it not on the playbook, or are those the guys that are in front of him that much better than him, or are they just straight up redshirting?
Yeah. Yeah. So it could be a strength thing, I guess, if they're redshirting him in that way. Mm-hmm. You see what Creed Humphrey's doing for Oklahoma?
What's that? The center?
Yeah, center.
Yeah, last year they said he was the best O-lineman anyway.
Yeah, well, I was a true freshman, so I guess he's a sophomore now, and he's, boy, what a player.
Right. Last year they said, you know, they had four guys to go in his draft, and they said Creed was the best of the five.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really something. Okay. So let's see. We talked a little bit about Skura. He got a B in this game. Yanda, he had a penetration on a pull that he allowed. So I forget who was taken down for the loss on that play, probably Ingram. But that was his only negative in this game. He left early, also an A in this one, as if that's another yawn for Yanda, just a day at the office.
Right. Well, Old Faithful.
Yeah. The guy who's playing great right now, Orlando Brown, is just on a fantastic run these last few weeks, and his play, he is a dark horse right now for a Pro Bowl candidate. Now, hopefully the Ravens won't have any play Pro Bowlers this year for obvious reasons.
Right.
But Brown is, there are not that many total good right tackles in the league. The right tackles that are good tend to be the best tackles in football. Like, the top three tackles by Pro Football Focus are all right tackles. But which is very strange, by the way. That doesn't normally happen. So you have Stanley is currently the highest rated Pro Football Focus left tackle. And of course, I'm grading him in a way that would be consistent with what's going on with Pro Football Focus there. But Brown is just having a great year. I mean, he is having a terrific year.
Yes, he's stepped up his pass pro, which, run blocking, he was good to me anyway last year, especially with that big body just constantly leaning on people. They eventually get tired of it. But his pass pro with us doing so much play action is helping him out, and he's getting on guys and staying there. He's improved his lateral quickness, and guys just can't beat him with speed like they were last year.
Yeah, you mentioned the play action, and maybe this is true of just generally in Lamar and the need for outside defenders to not be greenlit on every snap to rush the passer.
Right, and then that helps also.
Yeah,
because you got to sit there and you got to wait. You got to read the end and see if that's going. And we don't get in a lot of third and long situations, so they don't just have the opportunity to tee off and pass and rush the passer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have to think, and maybe you could tell me about this from a coaching perspective a little bit. But if a guy basically is in a position, it's like you always want to be moving on the edge rusher. If you're fanning the guy out, great, but that might be creating an opportunity for space. If you're creating space for somebody else, that might be good. But if you have to sit in a particular position and maintain effectively a two-gap responsibility on that edge, it's the worst thing against a player like Brown, whose biggest risk is getting beat to one side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with speed, and you basically you give that to him, the ability not to be beat in the one way. And it's like, yeah, come at my body.
So if instance you're in this outside guy, and we run some kind of counter toward, and like you said earlier, we use Brown to kick out. So now you, since you're rushing outside because you got to maintain it if Lamar keeps the ball or whatnot, you make the block easier for Brown to kick out, or if he's blocking down somebody else to kick you out, because you can't just haul in there and go spill it.
Yeah.
Because if you spill it, that means the puller and Lamar's probably going to go outside. And so now Lamar has a lead blocker on top of whatever the receivers are doing down the field.
So you mentioned Skura should love to play with Lamar just because the Ravens run the ball a lot. And obviously having a good offensive line in front of Lamar is a place where you're going to be valued. Mm-hmm. But it seems like to me even Brown, because of his style of play and his ability to get physical with players, but you know the risk, although I don't know that we've seen it that much in terms of him not being able to handle a guy with speed, but maybe even Brown could benefit more from playing with Lamar than Skura could.
All five of them could. Brown's going to get a nice payday after Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, to be a Raven for a long time. And so the fact that we run the ball as much as we do will only give him time to get better as a pass protector. So as Lamar running slows down as he gets older, he'll have two bookend tackles that will be great pass protectors at the time. And he can be more of a throwing quarterback and run sparingly.
Right. So yeah, run five times a game for four first downs, hopefully.
Right. He'll turn into Russell, running wise, Russell Wilson. Because Russell doesn't run that much, but when he does, it's normally for first downs.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Okay, Hurst and McCarr each had some short stints in this game, made 8 out of 9 and 7 out of 8 blocks respectively. I had a highlight for each of those guys, but go out and read the article, please, if you want to see timestamps on them and follow along. How about we talk about some other skill position players at this point?
Okay.
All right. You want to bring up anybody?
Not the ones I was going to talk about. You have in the list so far. So let's just start with Andrews.
Okay. Sure. You start. You've got obviously some things to say.
He's the best receiver on the team. Potentially the second best tight end in the league, in my opinion. And the fact that he is a blocker as well as a pass catcher is amazing to me, because normally you're getting guys that are one of the other, which, you know, Boyer started out that way also. He was just a blocker. Now he's turned into a pass catcher. But Andrews is elite. I don't know when his contract's up and we have to pay him, but we got a lot of young talent. And I think he, next to Lamar, is the cream of the crop with that young talent we have.
That's going to be a tough year, because Lamar, Andrews, and Zeus all come out of the same draft. Now, Lamar we have for one extra year on a fifth-year option, but mm-hmm. Zeus and Andrews both have to be paid the year before Lamar, which may create some cap constraints. They may have to figure out, hey, maybe we can't keep them both. But
right.
I guess you cross that bridge when you come to it. You know, if God forbid if anything were to happen to Lamar and he didn't make it to his second contract, ugh.
Right.
I don't want to think about it.
We got to make the most out of it while he's on his rookie deal.
There you go.
Because if he gets to the second contract fairly healthy, Lamar may break the bank.
Yep.
He may break. And I don't think it's going to be a long contract. It may be another like three or four year deal. I don't think it's going to be a long contract, but it's going to be lucrative.
Right.
It's going to be enough to where if he only gets two NFL contracts, he'll be good for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I think so. We talked a little bit about Patrick Ricard already. Anything else about his game you wanna hit on?
No, just his hard nose, the way he's an old school football player. He's a tough guy. He's excitable. He does the little things. He does all the dirty work and don't complain about it. He loves doing the dirty work.
All right. Now Ricard has one more year on his, not a rookie deal. It's an RFA year next year, where he'll get paid $3 million and change. It'll be a bargain. The Ravens will basically, I don't think any other team in the NFL will trade a second round draft pick to get him. I don't think, because there's not another team that can use him as effectively as what the Ravens do with him. And plus, a second round pick to sign anybody is just a very high price to pay.
Right. So I think he'll be a Raven. I think he loves it here, and they, you know, his contract won't break the bank. I think he'll be a Raven through this next contract.
Okay, so you're projecting another one, because I think he ends up getting, you know, I'm afraid to say he might end up getting Nick Boyle money, but it's probably a little bit less. Maybe he gets $4.5 million a year instead of $6 million a year on a same kind of present value basis. Meaning Boyle got his this year. If Ricard gets his next year, maybe 4.5 is really worth 5.5. So he gets $5.5 million, 16.5 over 3 years, say.
Yeah, I think, like I said, with us having so many good young players, we have the money to kind of keep surrounding cast. But like you said, in 2 or 3 years, when those guys, it's time to get paid, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because they all right around the same age. Well, not age, but in terms of football terms, they come out the same year. So those contract ends around the same time.
There you go. Okay. How about Roberts getting back in with the touchdown pass in this game?
I thought Roberts was getting pouty-ish, but you know, he got in and he got his touchdown, and it's almost like a about time, and not in a negative way. You know, the throw wasn't the greatest. He went up the ladder and got it, and you know, he celebrated with Lamar, and they had a good time with it. Come to find out, they've been pretty good friends anyway. But we just don't target the receivers that much, so they got to be patient. That'll be the one area where I don't think we can attract a top tier guy as far as like a free agent.
Okay, so all the more important for a player like Boykin to go out and do it in this offseason and step up. They can also draft somebody, I suppose. They have so many needs on defense, particularly a pass rusher, that they're going to have to interior line. I mean, just so many places where they really need to spend draft capital on defense. Yes. I think we're going to see a defensive-heavy draft.
I think so also, especially with, like you said, all these young skill guys we got and a young O-line with the exception of Yonder. I think defense is going to be the main priority. But still, I know this is an offensive podcast, but them guys are playing lights out right now.
Yeah. Yeah, how much fun is it to watch this team play in two ways like this?
Right. With guys that were on the street.
Yeah. It's so crazy, the whole Bynes and Fort and Owosu thing. We won't get into it because it's really for the defensive pod. But that to me is the weirdest thing. And I guess they've got now six guys who are effectively street guys who they brought in who all have played a significant role, particularly if you include Bennett Jackson, who came in and played a fair amount of defensive snaps now. But
and
also,
Jihad Ward
is included, and then Bynes and Fort and Pecco and Ellis.
Yep.
So you get to six pretty quickly there, and they're pushing out some guys.
I did have one guy I want to mention. I wanted to talk about Snead, and I love the way he makes the most out of his opportunities. The few opportunities he gets when he catches the ball, most of the time he gets yak or he gets the first down. And, you know, he's excited when he gets his one or two catches a game on probably two targets. But I like Snead when he was with the Saints, too. And for the fact of him to come to play and be like a slot guy for us, he fits right in. He's a small tight end for us.
Yeah, 70% catch rate this year, 21 out of 30 for Snead. Hasn't been for a lot of yards, 263 yards, I'm sure is not what Snead expected through, you know, 10 games of the season to be going at 26 yards a clip. You know, not what he wanted, but still, he's been a valuable player, and he has been getting first downs. And, you know, they extended him already. They let him know they love him.
Hey, you know, he's under 25 also.
Is he? Is he still under 25?
Remember the list you put out early in the year with the top players under 25 maybe? Or maybe under 26? Snead was on that list.
All right, I'm looking, buddy. I'm having a hard time believing that. But we'll...
Because I used your list in a podcast with some other guys, and Snead was on that list.
Oh, no, I know what it was. That list was who's still on their first contract, but Snead was already a RFA when they assigned him. He's 27 years and 33 days right now.
Ah, I stand corrected then. I thought it was under 25. My bad.
That's all right.
I've been thinking that since then. I was like, man, this dude been in the league a long time.
I should just, you know, as an announcer here, I should have just rolled with that. You had a story to tell. It was a perfectly valid point. I you know, there's no need for me to check up on you. And I'm like,
that's fine. My first official fact check.
There you go. All right. So where do you put the Ravens among the AFC contenders right now? Now, you've already talked about you don't think there's a team on the schedule that's going to beat them. But are you as sanguine, as happy about them as, say, Rich Eisen seems to be, as optimistic?
I think... Right today, right now, we're the best team in the AFC. Today. Come playoff time, potentially New England could be better because they get win back, and I think they'll have more continuity with Sanu and whatnot. And Kansas City still scares me.
Okay.
So I don't think Kansas City could stop us, but I don't know. I'm just terrified of Mahomes and those weapons, especially with the way Mecole Hardman has come around. And when you add Tyreek Hill in there and Kelce in there, which I think Kelce is the best tight end right now, and Shady McCoy, they got weapons on top of weapons. Now, I'm not saying they can stop us, but they just scare me.
They scare me as well, especially after the last two games and losing those two there when it appeared. You know, the first one they had won, the second one they had a chance. Mm-hmm. I'm it's not like I'm not scared of it, but I will say the Ravens are the new Chiefs in a lot of ways, except mm-hmm. they have a good defense. I mean, the Ravens are doing more than what the Chiefs did on a per drive basis last year. It's not close, in fact.
Yeah, I think if we control the clock, it wouldn't be a problem. But their quick strike ability is what scares me. We could win time possession by 15 minutes and still be in a dogfight.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a point Harbaugh made, is that you really need to steal possessions against mm-hmm. a team like the Chiefs, because it doesn't matter if you give them the ball at the 13-yard line like they did the last game, then they just score from 87 yards.
Right.
But a lot of teams, you know, the Texans were not in the very top tier of AFC contenders, but mm-hmm. the Ravens had 5 70-plus yard drives against a legitimate playoff contender, probably a division winner. Not a sure thing, but probably. And that's the sort of thing the 2007 Patriots did.
Do you remember looking at this stretch of games, and most Ravens fans were saying, well, maybe we can come out of here 3-2, we can be good. You know, maybe we break 500 in this stretch of six, we'll be good for the playoffs. Man, we could sweep this series, this stretch of tough games.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, they're going to L.A. against the reigning NFC champs as 3-point favorites.
Right.
You know, gamblers give them about a 61% chance to win this game, imputed from what's in the money line. Mm-hmm. I'm shocked at that. I never would have guessed that would have been what this looks like. But the Rams really look like a team in fast descent. Just an awful decision at cornerback with what they made in terms of not retaining Peters and, you know, forgetting they ever heard the name Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah. You know, and they got rid of the other corner too. Sent him to Miami.
Akeem Tlaib. Okay.
Yeah. He's gone also.
It's a lot. I mean, they need the cap space, and that team, I don't know if it's going to be this next year, but it probably will be this next year. They're going to have to completely rebuild. they don't have any number one draft picks. They haven't had one, I think, for 5 years now in a row from 3 years previous, this next year and the next year, they don't have one because of the Ramsey trade.
Right. They and probably Peters is going to help the Ravens out tremendously this week.
Yeah, I would think
on
so.
On different things with their quarterback and whatnot. Now, and I'll give a little bit away, and, you know, I hope the Raven fans don't hate me for it, but up until we got Lamar, Gurley was my favorite player. Even though I was a Ravens fan. I had been a Gurley fan since he was at Georgia, the things he did there. And I don't even like the Georgia Bulldogs. I just saw Gurley one Saturday. Then I saw him the next Saturday, and I'm like, man, I like this dude. Then when he had his little run with the Rams, but right now he's not even a factor. I don't think Gurley would even get another contract. He got his big contract, and I don't think he'll be in the league in 2 years because of those knees.
Wow. All right. So you're not concerned about the Ravens being able to stop Gurley?
Nope. I don't see Gurley as being a factor.
As
long as we continue with gap integrity like we do, and they're going to run stretch. Mm-hmm. They're going to run stretch. That's what they're known for. That's what they're good at. That's what Gurley's good at. Maintain your gaps, stretch to the sideline, and keep it to 1 or 2 yards. Anybody gets out of that gap, he's going to hit it up in there and be gone. You might not catch him.
All right. Is this a team that you can risk the 3-3-5 nickel against and only have one standing inside linebacker, or would you not do that against this team specifically because of what Gurley can do if he penetrates the level two and breaks one tackle?
I would not, because we need those guys there to not the cutback, but to just stop him when he decides to stick his foot in the ground and get vertical. There needs to be someone other than a smaller safety there to get Gurley down. Because the thing is for me is to get him before he gets going. Mm-hmm. And once he gets going, he's pretty darn good if you can let him get to the second level. So if he gets to the second level, he's pretty good.
Get a hand on him at the line of scrimmage or even in the backfield if you're lucky, yes. And then you're okay. That's been the the failing point of a lot of big backs in league history is once teams figure out how to penetrate against them, get a hand on them in the backfield, it's trouble.
And our two D linemen do a good job of going vertical down the line, not going up the field. They do a good job of maintaining their gaps and just going with the flow to play and not going up the field. And they'll, you know, guys will run right into them and cut right back into them.
You're talking Pearson Williams when they're healthy,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. When they're healthy, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, that hopefully Pierce is back, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. In some sense, I even really just want them to wait so that Pierce is certainly ready for the playoffs.
Right.
But hopefully he'll be back before then. Okay, MVPs from this game. You want to go back to the offense now and do this with me, or do you have a list you want to do your own?
I have one guy to mention for MVP, okay. And then then you can go with your guys. But my guy doesn't even touch the field. It's Roman.
Okay.
I mentioned this because I talked earlier about my situation in the playoffs. The other team's defensive coordinator came up to me and said, "Coach, we had no clue what you were doing on offense. We couldn't figure it out." And, you know, I played it off, but to me, that's the ultimate compliment from an opposing coach, just for them to say they can't figure out what you're doing because everything looks the same. That's what I think Roman's doing. Hmm. And that's why I called him the MVP, you know, for this one, because a lot of the plays look the same and they're not. He's mixing in the play action. He's throwing on first downs. He's not being predictable. He's just throwing a bunch of things at people, and it's hard to stop. Anytime, you know, the people on the major networks are saying this is something like the league has never seen, that's a good thing for the Ravens and Greg Roman.
All right. All right. Well, fair enough. I certainly am concerned about losing him after this season, just like I am about Wink. But let's enjoy this while it's here right now. My number three guy I'll give you is Mark Ingram.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of receptions. I've really been liking what I've seen in the receiving game. The elusiveness in space has shown up, particularly in giving Cunningham the old whoop and on that left sideline.
And sliding in.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. I'm never going to get tired of looking at the video of Cunningham missing him on the left sideline, though. I could watch that for all day.
Right.
Twitter is a big waste of time, but so I feel somehow I feel like the time's well spent when I'm watching that.
Yeah.
The number two guy, I can't even pick one of them because the offensive line played so well as a unit in this game. They all really deserve a piece of the credit for all the ample time and space they gave Jackson. That's my number two unit in this game. And I didn't even need to pick one of them. Last week it was Orlando Brown, but this week it's the whole group.
The honor roll O-line.
There you go. Number one, Lamar Jackson again. The statistics that are being piled up at this point just boggle the mind. The Ravens obviously Baltimore has not had the hot young quarterback in the NFL since the mid-70s with Burt Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a hell of a nice feeling.
He's been the FedEx ground player, once? He's been the FedEx air player twice, maybe? Mm-hmm. And he potentially could be back-to-back NFL Player of the Week or AFC Player of the Week, depending on how that goes tomorrow.
Yep, pretty good chance, I'd say. Dak Prescott for the NFC, I guess, is going to be. They don't have an NFL Player of the Week. It's a Conference Player of the Week, right?
Yeah, and I think Prescott threw for like 450.
Yeah. So who's the competition in the AFC? Would it be Mahomes? He had a 3-touchdown game, I know, with no interceptions. I'm trying to think of who else is competition in the AFC.
But he didn't look good. He had those numbers, but he didn't look good. I don't think anybody's a competition. I think he has it.
All right.
I don't want to jinx him.
Here's my other proposition for you. Don't know if you're a gambling man, but I'm still you're perfectly capable of adjudicating this. Lamar Jackson, if your $1 or let's say your $100 returns you $240, which is approximately what you get returned on a $100 bet right now. Or would you like 100 on Mahomes where you get back 1900?
For MVP?
For MVP of the league.
I'm going to take the 100 on Jackson right now. I got to go with my guy.
Okay.
I
think I'd take the 100 on Mahomes. I got to hedge my bet. If Mahomes wins it, I won't be that upset. And if Jackson could still lead him on a playoff run after that, but it would soothe me into the offseason to win a lot of money on Mahomes anyway.
The reason I say Lamar, because Mahomes put up so many numbers last year that it's hard to get close to that and duplicate winning the MVP again. Because We always want somebody new. We don't like the same guy winning all the time.
That's true.
When Michael Jordan was winning all those championships, and I love Michael Jordan, I just got tired of him winning.
Uh-huh.
And that's that. We don't like the same guy to keep winning because, you know, it should have happened a bunch of times. Brady should almost win it almost every year up until, you know, for the past 10 or whatever years, but we just don't like to see the same guy win.
Fair enough. Fair. You get about 50-1 on Brady right now, by the way, if you want to bet him. And by the way, a week ago, 150-1 was available on Mitch Trubisky, which I called at that point the stupidest money going if you bet on that. okay, Josh, we've wasted enough time here, buddy. What do you got in the mailbag for us?
All right, pretty soft mailbag today. First one up is with all these wide receivers that are blocking instead of catching the ball, at least this past Sunday. Is that something that we need to be concerned about, that wide receivers won't want to come play in Baltimore? I know, or just the fact that, do you think they're just having fun winning, that they don't care that they're getting the ball? We're so used to wide receivers being divas, and this is not a team for that.
All right, I'll start, and you go ahead. You sounds like you got something ready.
We talked about it earlier. It's going to be hard for us to attract free agent big time receivers because of that. What Josh just talked about. So we're gonna have to take young guys and, you know, and develop them and hopefully they have the love for winning.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, receivers are divas. They are. They not, you know, they perceive to be they're divas. And the ones that get the big bucks and they just not gonna want to come play with us because we don't throw it enough.
And honestly, I'm not sure that's such a terrible thing in terms of who we attract in free agency. The money that the Ravens have spent on free agent receivers, they've gotten a horrible return for over the years. Anquan Boldin was the exception, but they've got a bunch of other terrible free agent receivers, Sanders and Marcus Robinson, a bunch of other guys who just didn't do very much for this team.
I agree.
If I'm looking at one thing to love about that, I really love the way. Now, Boykin is a much bigger player than the man he was blocking on the 63-yard run, but he couldn't have done it any more perfectly in terms of positioning himself on that play. I just love to see that. And Boykin's earned a couple extra targets from that under your no block, no rock formula.
Right. Hey, that is it. I mean, anytime you look at long runs in high school, college, or NFL, there has to be receivers blocking. I mean, it just has to be. Because those runs go from, instead of them being 20 to 25-yard runs, if your receiver's blocking, they turn into 60 to 80-yard runs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where my no block, no rock comes from.
I keep saying it. I love the thing. I don't know. Is that widely known? When you said it was the first time I'd heard it.
It's widely known for kids that play for me.
All right.
So I don't know if it's like a universal thing coaches do or whatnot, and it may be, and I just don't know about it, but it's a staple for me. If you can't block, I don't care how well you catch the ball, your snaps will be limited.
Well, it sounds like that should be put on a t-shirt and up on your Patreon page.
Hey.
Be a good one.
Shh. Yeah. Hey, you've got a couple hours before this episode comes out to get that up. Looking ahead, we talked about tests for this team, and they easily made it through the Patriots, Seahawks, and Texans. What's the next big test that we need to look for?
How about the 49ers?
I agree.
All right, you guys are setting it right up for the last question in the mailbag, which is about the upcoming games and the schedule shift. Were you surprised that 49ers game was not shifted to the Sunday night 8 p.m. slot? And are you concerned that any other Raven games will be this year? Minion Hunter points out week 17 with the Steelers, which is the biggest one I'm concerned about because I have a flight at 8 p.m. that night.
Yeah, it's unlikely. I don't know why they would do this. I do know why they would do the Steelers. The way the Steelers game would be flexed is if the Ravens are playing for seeding and the Steelers are playing to get in. But otherwise, they're going to try and make that a game where that decides a division title, mm-hmm. because otherwise you have conflicts of interest with what's going on at other times during the day. So if the Steelers are actually playing to get in and there's other teams that are playing earlier in the day, it's inappropriate for the Steelers to actually be playing a night game. So I actually think there's a limited chance that'll be done. Good. I think it'll be another divisional game.
See, I look at it as Lamar's the most exciting guy in football. They're going to want him on the national stage.
No, they're
all going to look at lineups.
I think they're going to, like he said, they're going to try to get the best game, especially if there's a game where a win and end situation, they're going to try to get something like that. Because yeah. I don't, at the rate we're going, if we continue to traject upwards, that game won't really matter because we'll already be in as the number one seed. Pittsburgh will be, you know, getting ready for draft.
Yeah, you're projecting two more losses for New England if you're guaranteed that. Now, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I'm saying it could happen, and then the Ravens have to run the table as well for that last game to mean nothing.
I'm just throwing these positive rays out there.
There you go. I'm basking. Believe me, I'm hoping that's the way it works out. But I think the most likely thing is the NFC East game to decide the division title, if that can decide on, or the AFC South game to decide the division title would be the most likely Sunday night games that week.
And I think if it's NFC East, it's definitely going to be there because they love putting the Cowboys on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They love it.
Well, they're America's team.
Not anymore. It's Baltimore. Haven't you been reading the paper?
Yeah.
Does anybody read the paper anymore?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they still print papers, but all right. Well, remember to get in your questions using the hashtag film study mailbag. It's amazing. When they win and they win so well, we don't get a whole lot of questions. People aren't concerned about anything. They just want to celebrate.
You know, one of the problems was I didn't put out a little kicker for it this week. So it's on me, buddy. I'm sorry about that.
I mean, also everyone played really well on Sunday. It's hard to question Lamar's decisions when he doesn't drop the ball. It's hard to question the offensive line when they stop everyone from getting through. So
when you rush for 230 yards or whatever it was,
right. When even Gus Edwards is getting 100 yards, it's hard to question.
There you go.
So, all right, Sip to Tally. Fill us in again. Plug all that.
YouTube, Sip to Tally Films. Instagram, Sip to Tally Films. Twitter, Coach Evans 9.
All right, nice and simple. And Ken, Film Study Baltimore will have the offense breakdown in the next day or so, right?
It will. So I've been working on it, and I'll finish it and have it up tomorrow. Hope folks are tuning in occasionally when I'm on the radio. Have four segments a week, so make sure you get there. And definitely, if you want any kind of detail on what those segments are, come back, get the timestamp stuff, and get your Game Pass subscription going, and play some film analysis with me.
Right, and make sure everyone's following you on Twitter so they get those little notifications when you're going on the air with 105.7.
There you go. So at Film Study Ravens and at filmstudybaltimore.com online.
All right, all set, guys. Well, enjoy the rest of your week.
Hey, I want to say happy Thanksgiving to you guys. I probably won't get to talk to you before then, but I appreciate you guys having me on, and best of holidays to you guys.
Yeah, you too, Coach. Yeah. We love it every time you're here.
Appreciate you, fellas.
If you have a family relying on your income, you need life insurance. But finding the best quote shouldn't take a lifetime. That's where Policy Genius comes in. In minutes, Policy Genius could save you 50% or more simply by comparing quotes from America's top insurers. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the paperwork and red tape. To save on life insurance and get protection for you and your family, head to policygenius.com today.
For the ones standing guard, for the eagle-eyed, for the knights in shining armor, and for all those who support them, we are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com/safety, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.